Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to What's in a Name, a podcast all about what names mean and how they came to be. I am James.
I'm Anna.
Today we are asking, what's in a game?
Ah, boo. That was the big secret joke you had queued up.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to tell you in advance, because otherwise you
would have been prepared for it. You wanted an authentic aha boo. Well, let me tell you, I meant that aha boo from the bottom of my soul, James.
I'm glad to hear. So yeah, we're going to look at the names that board games have and try and find out what the stories are behind them. Connect Four is not going on the list.
No. No.
No.
We considered it. We decided that it would just take too long to explain.
So do you want to start us off? What's your first game?
I want to start with chess.
Of course.
I'm so excited. Yeah, of course. I've gone on record as being horny for chess, like, obviously. We're going to go this route. Because I figure it's probably one of the oldest board games we've got, and therefore, with the most history, we're going to have the most to say about where it comes from. Even knowing that, I did not expect the wild ride and the long journey that this took me on. So, are you ready?
I'm extremely excited to hear this, yeah, because I don't know any of this myself.
Excellent. All right, so we start in 6th century Sanskrit.
Naturally.
It was called Chaturanga. And now you might know the word Chaturanga from yoga practice if you do that. It means four limbs. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it was called that is because it referred to the four parts of the Indian army and the four non-royal chess pieces, which were elephants, horses, foot soldiers, and either chariots called Ratha or boats called Roka.
Yeah, the classic chess pieces.
Exactly. Well, they evolved into our modern bishop, knight, pawn, and rook.
Okay.
The castle. So even back then, it had the 8x8 grid, but it didn't have the black and white squares, which was interesting. And thinking about it, that doesn't really add much to the game except for clarity, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's not really word history. That's just me nerding out about chess. But I figure...
If you want to know the history of that, they found like black and white checkerboards as far back as ancient Egypt.
Really?
Like, there's 5,000 years of history there.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that is extremely cool. Oh, I've got even more research to do.
I imagine someone just went, you know, we were playing on an 8x8 grid, let's just reuse that checkerboard we've already got.
Yeah. Oh, that must be it. Oh, that's amazing. But yeah, so from there it passed into Persia around 600 AD. They called it Chaturang, which was shorter than Chaturanga. The king's piece was called Shah, meaning king. And they'd say Shahmat to mean the king is finished or the king is dead at the end of the game.
Checkmate.
Exactly. That's where we get checkmate from. And the chariot pieces were called rocks. And again, we can see how we call our castle pieces rooks from there.
I did always wonder why do the castles move? It makes a lot more sense if they're chariots.
It does. Chariots or boats. Absolutely. Then in Latin, Shah was adapted to Shacum, S-C-A-C-U-M. Which meant a check. Mm-hmm. That's the noun form. And the verb form was shakari. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get the French word echecs and our chess.
Okay, so comes from French.
It comes from French. It comes from Latin via French, which is one of the patterns that we see over and over again when I get into
yes.
it.
It's the fault of the Normans, that one is.
Yeah, that's not on us for once.
I mean, you say not on us. We are the Normans, right?
Are we?
Well, the Normans won.
Oh, fuck. I haven't been paying attention. I've been a Norman this whole time.
Yeah, I mean, the Normans invaded and got rid of assimilated the Anglo-Saxon, mm-hmm. shall we say.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so what we see with chess is that the word Shah, meaning king, has become the root word for a lot of languages. So it's Schach, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, in German, Schachmati in Russian, and in Dutch, Norwegian, Hungarian, Polish, Romanian, Finnish. The name of the game chess derives from the Persian word for king. So we're unusual in that it comes from Czech. Also, one of my favourite things about chess, the variant we play where the queen can move as far as she likes in any straight line, that's been referred to as the Mad Queen's Chess. It was a relatively new change in the rules, and it was thought to be a little bit bonkers that this woman was striding around the board, taking charge and doing damage.
Again, that's something I've always wondered about chess, is why is it the female piece, given the historical associations with war and the role of women in war, why is the female piece the most powerful? And
well, it wasn't a queen historically. It was an advisor or counsellor in older forms.
The vizier.
It became a queen after we had a couple of queen regents around Europe at around the same time, and we got used to the idea that a woman could be powerful, and decided to incorporate it into chess, which is extremely rad of us as a globe.
It has led to the equality for women everywhere.
Sure. I read so much about this. I could have done a whole chess episode and been quite happy. There's so much there.
I mean, I'm sort of desperate to make you explain the origins of other chess terms, but I feel like maybe we'll get to it in future episodes.
Oh, yes. Down for that. What's yours?
I'm going to start with a very small one. Since I already mentioned ancient Egypt, you may be aware, Anna, that I work at the British Museum.
I am.
We have a whole bunch of board games. Actually, one of my colleagues at the museum, Irving Finkel, one of the few people in the world who can read cuneiform, deciphered the rules of the Royal Game of Ur, which was a game that we only had the boards for and some pieces for, but no idea how to play until he read a cuneiform tablet that had the rules on it.
I had no idea you told me about the cuneiform, and I was like, yeah, I've definitely heard the name Irving Finkel. I had no idea he got to Ur. That's awesome.
He's an extremely impressive man.
Yeah.
With an amazing beard. I suggest everyone Google him and check out the beard.
Yeah, not the work, just the beard.
Yeah.
Priorities, people, come on.
But anyway, he's done many impressive things. I have no etymology facts about that. I just wanted to throw his name out there because he's that good. but the Game of Ur is played on a very similar board to an ancient Egyptian game called Senet. Have you heard of Senet?
No.
If you've watched Lost, in Lost, Jacob and the Man in Black play a game with white and black counters, and they're playing Senet.
Oh, that's fascinating because, as you know, I did watch Lost religiously. Very
now
cool.
Now you know something more about Lost.
This is basically what I'm in this for, is Lost trivia.
The Game of Senet is an anglicised version of some hieroglyphs, which I found interesting. Like, the notation for Senet in hieroglyphs is just ZNT.
Oh.
The reason I wanted to mention this is because one thing I don't think people necessarily realise is that hieroglyphs are, like, phonetic. Like, they're not pictographic representations of concepts. They have actual sounds associated with them.
Yeah, I had no idea about that because I learned some Incan hieroglyphs and they do work as the picture represents the word.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that it could represent letters or phonemes is really interesting.
Yeah, and this is kind of my rant. When people go like, oh, emoji, they're just like modern hieroglyphs. Like, we've been using pictographs for you know, millennia. It's like, well, we haven't really, because Egyptian hieroglyphs are just an alphabet.
That is fascinating.
It happens that they're more pictures than our current letters.
Huh.
So I just wanted to check that in since we mentioned Egypt.
That's really good. Thank you.
The game I actually want to talk about is Mahjong, which is, as you know, a Chinese game played with tiles.
Mm-hmm.
Its name doesn't have any inherent meaning. It's actually derived from an earlier game.
Okay.
An earlier form of it, which was Maxiang, which means sparrows.
Really?
Yeah, and I sort of looked into, like, why would this game be called Sparrows?
Mm.
I wondered maybe, because obviously the tiles have imagery and pictures on in certain versions of Mahjong.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered maybe there was some bird imagery associated with it. But the reason it's got the name Sparrows it's believed, at least, is because the clattering of the tiles when they were being mixed around resembled the noises that sparrows make.
Oh, that is so cool. It's like onomatopoeic almost.
Yep.
Oh, exactly, that's lovely. Like
that. So I was very glad to learn that, because, as you know, I like the poetic ones, and that's pretty poetic.
Definitely. Definitely. That's very... I haven't played Mahjong in ages. Man, I would like to.
What was the Windows version called?
It was just called Mahjong, wasn't it?
Was it just called Mahjong?
I think yeah, so. Okay, fair enough. That's, okay. So Windows 3.1 would have been when I discovered that wonderful game.
Yeah. So I, you know, there's nothing more to say about that. I enjoyed the imagery.
I don't blame you. That's lovely. Okay. The next one I wanted to get to, a friend of mine on Twitter, Aza Bassa, actually put out the call for people to give us some gaming etymology facts. And somebody suggested that I look into the history of the word meeple. Now, do you know what meeple means, James?
I know the words. I could not hazard a guess at the meaning.
So it's spelled M-E-E-P-L-E. And it refers to the vaguely humanoid, almost starfishy, like Patrick from SpongeBob-shaped figures made of wood that acts as a representation of the player or people in a board game called Carcassonne and some other games since.
Of course. The reason I know that word is because of Only Connect. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because there was a team called the Meeples, I remember now.
That's
carry,
so cool.
Carry on.
Yeah, so I'm fascinated by meeples as a plural, and I'll explain why in a moment. This word was invented only a few weeks after the board game Carcassonne debuted at the Essen Game Fair. It wasn't part of the game. They didn't decide they should be called meeple. Mm-hmm. A player called Alison Hansel coined the word as a portmanteau of my and people to describe the little wooden figures each player uses. So every single source I found that said that, there was somebody asking, so who's Alison Hansel then? And nobody could explain. She doesn't seem to be, as far as I can tell, she doesn't seem to be heavily involved in board games professionally. I think she's a teacher. I found her Twitter account. She's never tweeted about meeples or Carcassonne. But when meeple got added to the Oxford English Dictionary, she commented that she felt like a proud mama. If anyone's got the full story, I'd love to hear it, because she hasn't tweeted in a year. And it's just, nobody seems to have actually told the story of how and why she coined it and how that caught everyone's attention and how it became the official word that people use throughout the board gaming fan community for the little humanoid figures.
Yeah, I think we should DM her, point her at this episode of the podcast and just say, we'd really like to talk to you about this.
Can we send
you an email or Skype you? Anything
Alison
like that?
Hansel, if you're hearing this, I would love to get the full story.
I think it would be good to get it on record, because if nothing else, we've learned from doing this podcast that there are a lot of circumstances where the origins of words is left completely to sort of folk history. So if we can get the person who coined the word to tell us exactly what she remembers about doing so, I think that would be a valuable contribution to society.
Because things fade into obscurity, and it seems like too soon for time fog to happen for something that happened in the year 2000, you know?
Exactly.
Over to you.
So, again, this is quite a small one. I was looking into the origin of the word game, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the general term. So it goes through many different languages. Like, obviously, it goes through Germanic languages, back to Proto-Indo-European. There are two potential roots for the word game.
Mm-hmm.
So in Proto-Indo-European, ga meant doing things together. It was like a modifier that meant together.
Oh,
and no one is sure whether it's the Proto-Indo-European garmen, which means like men together,
mm-hmm.
or garmen, which means thinking together.
Oh, wow.
So I found that kind of interesting, that it can come from the idea of several people doing a single thing together,
mm-hmm.
or to be sitting around thinking together, you know, strategizing.
That's really lovely.
Yeah. And also, while I was researching this, I found out as well that the word gamble does actually come from... I wasn't sure if it did, but it comes from similar roots via Old High German gammel, meaning pleasure or fun.
Oh, man, that's really good to know. Okay, and while we're on the subject, are you done with that one?
Yeah, it was just a small one.
It's really cool. But yeah, so I was looking into backgammon, And it has nothing to do with pigs, it turns out. they've got the back part because pieces are sometimes forced to go back, and gamen, meaning game or play, from Middle English. So by the time it reached Middle English, G-A-M-E-N meant game or play.
Okay.
So yeah, again, a very short one because there's not much more to go into with that, but I think it's very cool, and I think it's very funny that I assumed it was related to pork products.
I mean, I did wonder, although I have a backgammon fact.
Oh, yeah?
Do you know what the boards were called in backgammon?
No.
They were called tables.
Okay.
And so have you ever heard the expression turn the tables?
Yes.
So to turn the tables referred to the idea that if you were losing in the game, you might turn the tables so that your opponent's side was facing you.
Okay.
So that's where we get the sort of colloquialism, turn the table.
That's extremely good. I think it's your turn then.
We mentioned checkers earlier. So another name for checkers is draughts. And that's how I learnt the name. So I was wondering, where did the name draughts come from? So there's an obsolete form of the word draft, which means to move, specifically in board games. To make a draft was to move a piece on a board game. And it comes from French tray via Latin tractus, which meant dragging. And is the same root as the word tractor.
Tractor, yeah. And intractable.
Exactly. That's where the name drafts come from.
Rename it to tractors now, IMO.
Absolutely.
That's really good. I've got a very quick one about Monopoly.
So I feel like Monopoly's it's got a fairly clear etymology as far as it seems, but I'm interested to hear what you've dug up on it.
Yeah, so I basically wanted to touch on that. So we've got monos, meaning one, and polein, meaning to sell, and that's from the ancient Greek. So I did not know the second part of it. I assumed it was poly as in many.
I assumed it was poly as in many, so I'm interested to hear otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something new for me, and I wanted to touch on the fact as well. I know most of you will know this, but it's worth going over because it's really interesting. It was originally called the Landlord's Game. It was invented and designed by one woman. There were two ways to play. You could play cooperatively or competitively, and the drawn-out suffering as you watch one person accrue wealth, that was the lose condition. We were never meant to enjoy that version of the game. But it got stolen and pirated by loads of different people around America and eventually bought up by the Parker brothers.
Interesting.
So now they have a monopoly on that.
Did we have the name of the woman?
So the lady who patented it in 1904 was Elizabeth McGee, M-A-G-I-E. And it was intended to educate users about Georgism, also called geoism and single tax is the old way of referring to it. It's an economic ideology which holds that people should own the value they produce themselves. So it's a sort of socialism, the sort of thing America really doesn't respond to very well.
I mean, you can sort of see then in that case how the game of Monopoly got steadily manipulated until accumulating all the money was the goal.
Yeah, and now it sucks. And now it makes everyone miserable except for the person who's winning.
Yep. I mean, in that way, it's still a clear lesson about capitalism, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah, maybe it's time to rewrite the rules.
I think so. Let's do our own. Let's do a punk version of Monopoly.
Yep.
Call it, let's see, I don't know, what would be timely and relevant? Let's call it the Landlord's Game. Have you got any others?
So there are two I just want to finish this off quickly with. The game Yahtzee. Have you ever played Yahtzee?
I feel like I must have done.
I have many fond memories of playing Yahtzee, which is just a sort of generic poker dice game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, the name itself is just a brand name, but it derives from an earlier version, which was called Yacht. And it was called Yacht because, according to Hasbro at least, the dice game of Yacht was invented by a Canadian couple who used to call it the yacht game because they played it on a yacht with their friends.
So far, it makes sense.
Yeah, I like the staggering sort of lack of imagination. It's weird because when I saw Yahtzee, I wondered like, oh, is that maybe some sort of Asian corruption? But no, it's a Canadian corruption.
Yeah, it seems like an exclamation, doesn't it? I think, is the brand name, does it officially have an exclamation mark?
I'm not sure if it officially has an exclamation mark, but in the adverts and stuff, people definitely used to shout Yahtzee when they got a Yahtzee. So
it just entered my brain as a thing that people shout.
Yahtzee. Yep, definitely. So that's where Yahtzee came from. And the last one, I'm not sure if this necessarily counts as a board game. It's maybe more of a bar game. Mm-hmm. Tiddlywinks.
Well, we're unlikely to have another category that Tiddlywinks falls under. It is very much its own beast, isn't it?
Exactly. So Tiddlywinks is a conjunction of two separate words. Winks are the counters in Tiddlywinks.
Oh, those are winks.
Yep, they're winks.
That's so cute.
And tiddly means an alcoholic drink.
It does. It means a little bit drunk, right?
It does. Well, no. It can mean a little bit drunk. It can also mean a little bit of alcohol.
A tiddly.
And it is, yeah, it's a colloquial term. I assume it's related to sort of tiddler, as in like a small fish.
Quite possibly. That's interesting. Yeah.
But apparently Tiddlywinks were also secret pubs or like hidden pubs. Not like covert, just hard to find.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I think it does connote smallness, you know, because we've got tittle as well with the T's instead of D's. And that means the little... Is that the dots over the I's or is that the lines across the T's?
Tittles. You've put me on the spot.
Yeah, there's jots and tittles, and one is the dots over I's and one is the lines over T's.
Tittles are the dots, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so a tittle is a tiny dot, and a tittle is a hidden pub, and a tiddler is a tiny drink.
A tipple is a small drink.
A tipple is a little drink as well. Oh my gosh, I love this. I doubt there's like an etymology so much as a general feeling that these words sound small. That's really interesting. We should look into that.
Yeah. And I just quickly, I wanted to read out some alternate names for Tiddlywinks because it was a massive craze during the 1880s and 1890s. And many versions of the game sort of cropped up with different names. It's variously been called Spoof, Flippity Flop, Jumpkins, Golfette, Marrow, and Flutter.
Wait, give me the first three again.
Spoof, Flippity Flop, Jumpkins.
If you gave me those three words and told me to guess what they meant, I would not land at Tiddlywinks in 100 years. I really wouldn't. That's fantastic.
Yeah. All right, so that's all my games.
Okay.
Are we ready to move on?
I think we are.
Do we have anything for what we learned?
I have learned nothing. Or at least I've forgotten everything I have learned. My mind is turning to porridge.
Yeah.
I'm willing to blame this on the Rones, you know.
The Rones, yeah. Yeah. We didn't talk about the Rones in our diseases episode.
We didn't.
We should
we
have.
We did a bit, didn't we?
We talked about coronavirus. We didn't talk about calling it the Rones.
Oh, we didn't, no. Oh, I think Rona is gaining traction online.
I'm disappointed.
I know. You still got time. You can steer the discourse.
Still this year. We just need Boris Johnson to say, I've recovered from the Rones. And we'll be fine.
But what could we bribe him with?
Well, what could we bribe Boris Johnson with? Probably literally anything. Money, sex, power, like anything, whatever you got going.
The big three.
Yeah. Yeah.
With you on that.
So... Our regular final section of the podcast is called Any Other Names, in which we assign different names to existing things or come up with new names for ideas and concepts which don't yet have them. So I've only got one this week. I'm interested. How many have you got?
Two.
So you go first.
Well, I've got Ludo and Cluedo. Which one do you want to hear first?
Ooh, Cluedo. Always Cluedo.
Cluedo. So it's called Clue in America, which I guess makes mine more sense, really. But I reckon just call it Whodunit. You know, why complicate things? It's one of the few cases where I'll tolerate bad grammar. Interesting fact. The word whodunit is 1930s US slang, and it was followed by a word I've never heard before. Why done it? In 1968.
Why done it?
Why done it? A much more interesting and nuanced question. How I don't know what it? The game of why done it would entail, but I'm keen to play.
Why done it? Presumably in why done it, you would... have to figure out the motives for the murder committed in a game of whodunit.
Do you know, we could make that.
We could
make that. Cards with motivations on, and you have to sort of bluff and talk around them and see what you can get away with.
Yeah, that's a good party game. I'll snip this bit out.
We're going to make a game.
I like the idea, yeah.
All right.
I'm down with that. I think Cluedo is a needlessly obscure name and... turning it into something more immediately comprehensible is a very good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Whodunit. Coming soon.
So I have a similar reason for choosing my one. You will be aware that I'm a huge fan of the best board game, Scrabble.
Yes.
I'm aware that it has its flaws.
We still need to finish our Words with Friends game.
We do. I mean, it's okay. I understand that you're scared to lose. That's fine.
Are you? Do you? Is it?
I briefly looked into whether Scrabble had any interesting etymology behind it. It's just just exactly what you'd expect, like the Scrabble as in scrabbling for tiles.
Mm-hmm.
Scrabbling for meanings. So when it was originally created by Alfred Butts... Why are you sniggering, Anna?
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm really mature and I wouldn't snigger at that. That's people's name, you know? Some people are just called that.
Alfred Mosher Butts created Scrabble. And he originally proposed that it be called Lexico.
Oh, I like that, Butts. He's got some good ideas. I cannot lie.
Yeah, so he wanted it to be called Lexico, and presumably the publishers were like, sorry, Alfred, no.
I guarantee there have been at least 3 games called Lexico released since.
Right, and I think Scrabble isn't a great name. I think Lexico is also not a great name. So I was trying to think, what would I call Scrabble, given the chance? So I think in Scrabble, the way to get the best scores is to have the longest words. Are you aware of the term for people who have a large vocabulary of long words? For example, you know, Will Self or Stephen Fry.
Go for it.
The one I've got is a sesquipedalian.
Yes!
Yes. So just out of interest, I looked into what sesquipedalian means. It literally comes from Latin, sesqui meaning 1.5, and pedalis meaning measuring 1 foot. So sesquipedalian is to measure 1.5 feet long.
Oh my goodness. Wait, so is the Sasquatch 1.5 times the size of a person?
I would imagine Sasquatch comes from some form of indigenous language.
That would probably make more sense.
Rather than Latin, being in Canada.
Damn it.
But, you know, the French did go to Canada, so maybe it's from that. We will look it up in our cryptids episode, which I will add to
the
list.
Yes! Add it to the list. Yeah. Oh, that'll be fun. I wonder what Mothman means.
So I think sesquipedalian is too long a word to have broad appeal. So my suggestion is that we just cut out one syllable, call Scrabble quip.
Oh, that's cute. I like it. Yeah,
quip would be a nice high scoring word as well.
It would. It's a very good word. Yeah.
So I'm going to be sending a letter to Mattel, sending a letter to Milton Bradley, sending a letter to Hasbro. That, I don't know who published it, so we've covered that basis.
You hack. Very nice. I'm down with calling it quip. And in my brain, every time I say it, I'll be thinking sesquipedalian, which is a very pleasing word.
Exactly.
Very pleasing.
So do you want to round us off?
Sure. The last one I've got is Ludo, which I think is quite a lazy name to start with. It's Latin for I play. It doesn't tell you what the game is.
That is.
Doesn't tell you how it works. Just I play. In America, it's called Parcheesi, which is interesting.
Parcheesi. Oh, is that what Parcheesi is?
Yeah, from the ancient Indian Parcheesi, which means a throw of 25, which is the highest roll you can make with cowrie shells, apparently.
Okay, so just quickly, while we're talking about the Latin, the way I have encountered this word before is in the terminology for gladiatorial training.
Yeah.
Where the ludus was the place where you trained, basically.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
It was the training camp for gladiators, and when I watched Spartacus, the excellent TV show about nudity and murdering, their base was the ludus.
That's really good.
I would never have connected it to Ludo.
Yeah, and you do still come across this word in modern talk about, say, computer gaming. People talk about the ludonarrative aspect of games, how the story is told through play.
Ah, I always assumed ludonarrative meant as in ludicrous.
No, it just means the story told through play.
Amazing.
Yeah, but so the Parcheesi word for it refers to the highest roll you can make with cowrie shells. We don't use those. We use a d6, a standard square die, so that doesn't help us. As a reminder of the gameplay in this game, if one of your tokens, as it goes around the board, lands on a square occupied by an enemy piece, you bounce their piece right back to its beginning. So I think there's something in that, because it's got a pleasing, like, whack-a-mole vibe. It causes people to have to start their whole journey again, so I think it should be called Groundhogs. I think Groundhogs would be a really fun name for the game of Ludo.
Yeah, though in a few centuries that's going to really confuse people, because they'll be like, what what has this game got to do with the sort of beaver-like mammal?
Frankly, if Groundhog Day hasn't made it into the future, it's not a future I care about.
Groundhog Day, by definition, does not make it into the future.
Oh no, that's true. I'll leave a time capsule explaining it.
Okay, so I have just briefly looked up the etymology of the word ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
Just to bring us all back in a neat circle. So ludicrous means sort of intended as a jest. Comes from the Latin ludicrous, which comes from the Latin ludicrum, which meant stage play.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so good. Oh, I like that a lot. Thank you.
We've all learned something.
Amazing. We've all learned upwards of three things. I'm so pleased.
Okay, so I guess it's time to wrap it up. My name is James. You can find me on Twitter at James Hunt.
You can find me on Twitter at Boots Magoot.
We have a joint Twitter account, which is at WIAN Podcast, where you can find subscription links, word-related nonsense, probably interesting facts from other people that we have retweeted.
Yeah. There's smart people out there. Did you know that?
Yeah.
There's just, like, really smart people. Thank you for spending your time with us, dear audience. Suck up. And if you've got any ideas for new episode themes, send them our way. We'll be happy to hear them. And then completely ignore them and do our own thing, most likely. But, you know, it's important that you feel included.
We'll be back next week.
All right. Bye.
Goodbye.